This podcast is part of the Gonna Geek Network. The opinion expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gonna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GonnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Critics say we should be watching these movies.
But we're here to see if they're right.
Join us as we take a cinematic journey through independent and classic film.
So dim the lights.
And get ready for the show.
This is Art House Legends Podcast, where high art and geek culture collide. This is the movie dude, Eric, and along with me are...
This is Kent.
And Chris.
And in this episode, we're discussing 13th, featuring Melina Abdullah, Michelle Alexander, Cory Booker, Van Jones, Charles Rangel, Angela Davis, along with a lot of other individuals, and directed by Ava DuVernay. Well, gentlemen, we are getting to a current Oscar nominee for this Oscar season. On top of that, this being the last film that we're doing for February, that it was only fitting that we handle one that dealt with African Americans specifically, and the and I thought that this is a very timely issue to be discussing on Art House Legends. So, gentlemen, are you ready to tackle a pretty prominent film dealing with this subject, considering that we are, in fact, three white guys talking about African American issues?
Semi-ready.
It's a landmine! It's a minefield, let's just put it that way. We are definitely treading on very tricky subject matter, but hey, film is not meant to be comfortable unless, you know, you're talking about the cute, pleasant stuff that the Art House has never been very keen on. And welcome to the jungle. But what about you, Kent? You ready to tackle this?
Well, I don't call myself woke, but I'm at least groggy with eyes open going... So...
All right. Well, gentlemen, this is our second film featuring director Ava DuVernay. Last year, yes, we did Selma, and we also did about a year and a half ago, we did Beast of No Nation, which was a Netflix original film. Both of these particular brands have kind of grown since we talked about both of these. In fact, I believe that this is the second nomination for Netflix for an Academy Award. And Ava DuVernay, was this her second? She wasn't nominated for Best Director for Selma, but I believe, though, that this is definitely her most prominent film when it comes to the Academy Awards. So, out of curiosity, what is your opinion about the quality of films coming from Ava DuVernay and from Netflix?
Let me tackle the Netflix part first. High quality, sometimes better than what you'd see from a studio.
Yeah.
Really,
well, I remember that all of us had a pretty strong positive vibe with Beast of No Nation.
Right.
And I believe that Netflix overall has been a standard for quality, although they have been kind of branching out into the less than quality like type films. Sandler.
Yeah.
Well,
you can't get anywhere unless you experiment a little.
I get you. But what about you, Chris? This is your first time talking with us about DuVernay and Netflix. Do you have any particular opinions?
I did not see Selma, so this was my first time with the DuVernay film. So, I don't have a lot to say about that. But as far as Netflix goes, I mean, I love most Netflix original created content. So, I mean, the quality is always pretty high quality, you know.
I get you. Now, I've seen quite a bit of Netflix's stuff. Their TV stuff seems to be more prominent now. It's the stuff that gets the most attention. Although, like I said, when we talked about Beast of No Nation, I really love that film. In fact, it made my top 10 list that year. So And considering that I said nothing but good stuff about DuVernay's work with Selma, I thought that she was definitely a filmmaker that to be looking out for, because I thought that she did a really good job with such a large budget film. I didn't see her standout film, the one that kind of brought her to prominence yet, but I will at some point, because I do still believe that she is a filmmaker to kind of keep an eye on. Despite however I feel about this film, as we'll get into later on. But I guess it is interesting that DuVernay has never done a documentary before. So this is her first documentary. This is tackling a pretty heavy topic, especially today, considering all of the events that have been going on in regards to race relations, both prior to the 2016 election, but I think that it had come to a head during the 2016 election, and the pretty divisive nature of the candidates that were involved in that election, especially the ones who'd secured their party's nominations. So I guess let's go ahead and let's, because we can't talk about this film without talking about politics. Are you coming into this film with an open mind? Do you have a set political ideology that you think might be affecting how you look at this film? Where do you stand on in regards to objectivity going into this film?
Well, and I'm a total blank slate as far as political stuff goes. I mean, I had no stance on either side or whatever. I just kind of experienced the film as is.
Yeah.
A lot of what this film touches on, I had heard from little bits here and there. This is the first time it's really been brought together for me to say, this connects to this, this, and all the lines drawn on the board kind of thing. Which really gets to sound like a conspiracy theory until you realize, start listening to the audio, and like, wow, those people really are saying this thing. And yeesh. Anyway, we'll get into those parts later on. But it would be nice if there was a counterpoint film that said, oh no, she's wrong. Here's the reality that was like the more conservative right-wing side saying, and here's the proof that shows that no, she's not necessarily making stuff up, but her facts aren't exactly right, and tried to show that there's something different.
Well, I think it's interesting that you bring that particular essence up. I will say that I'm coming into this. I do have, as people probably have seen in other episodes, I do kind of fall more towards the centrist. Some people probably put me more onto the right-leaning approach. I see myself more as a centrist, although I will kind of admit that I'm definitely far from a left-leaning individual. But at the same time, though, I want to look at this film not from a political perspective. I really want to be able to look at this as an argument. Now, I'm going to say this. I admire films and filmmakers who can look at information and look at, especially documentaries that can look at perspectives and give me something interesting to look at, even if I don't agree with it politically. I want to be able to kind of see the argument that is being made here. So I'm going to look at this film specifically from the arguments that it's making and the thesis that the film is trying to sell me in regards to this. And this is kind of the same way that I try to look at films that are done by, say, Michael Moore or Errol Morris and other filmmakers that have kind of tried their hand at very but definitely political perspectives. I will say, though, that I've also kind of, I don't know if I've changed or if filmmakers who have done political films have changed, but I get the sense that the quality of political documentaries have been steadily decreasing since the height of the Michael Moore period. And I'm just kind of curious, where do you stand on political documentaries? Do you watch them at any point? Are there any that you come back to or that you see as being a standard You know, do you have you watched the Michael Moore documentaries? Are there other filmmakers that you kind of see in this particular era or this particular genre?
Well, I'm behind on my Michael Moore documentaries, but he specifically has a viewpoint that he charges straight for, and there's no meandering. Mm-hmm. He does tend to edit based on what his viewpoint is. Back in college we did can't remember name of film, embarrassing, the Flint, Michigan one.
Roger and Me.
Roger and Me, yeah, and it's got pointed out how some of those scenes were just intercut just to give messages and mm-hmm. yeah, but
no, I will say though that I was a huge Michael Moore fan. And I'll come out and say it right now. I'm going to be doing a lot of comparisons between Ava DuVernay and Michael Moore, and some of it is admirable. A lot of it, not so much. Okay. But for me though, Bowling for Columbine was one of the films that made that kind of changed my perspective on politics. Back in 2002 when I had seen it, I was a huge fan of Fahrenheit 9/11. But at the same time, I had also seen some of the counter documentaries in regards to Michael Moore. I forgot which one it was, but there was this really good one that countered Michael Moore that really showed just how he really did... how he basically chopped people's words up and how he really he put his own narrative over the truth in his, and it really changed how I looked at his films. I still admire what he does specifically for kind of getting a narrative across, especially with Bowling for Columbine. If we ever talk about that film, I'll probably still give him a lot of credit for being able to get his narrative across. And the one thing that I admire about Michael Moore, and I will say also kind of Ava DuVernay as well, is that he has a thesis and he tries to back that thesis up. It's kind of like a research paper in that sense, where it's like, okay, Here's what I'm going for and here are my supporting arguments. Whether those arguments are factual or not is left to be said. But the way that he approaches it is very interesting. And DuVernay, especially with 13th, kind of goes in that same direction. She puts her thesis out at the beginning. And from there, she uses her talking points and her talking heads to kind of back up that argument. But... out of curiosity, though, what do you think is the thesis behind behind 13th? What is it that she's trying to say?
That over the last every couple decades, somebody brings back a way to bring back slavery.
So what is the 13th Amendment? Because the 13th here is talking about the 13th right. Amendment, which was the amendment that was used to free the slaves back during the Civil War, it was started during the Civil War. In fact, Lincoln was about the passing of the 13th Amendment, the Steven Spielberg film. It's interesting that they're using the 13th Amendment, the same amendment to the Constitution that freed the slaves. Is what the film is saying is the thing that is being used
let's bring up here for possibly non-American listenership. I know you're out there. Yes. Mm-hmm. This is the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The first line of it is, "Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction." Which means no slavery banished in the United States or any place we happen to drop a couple troop divisions. So no slavery, except as punishment for a crime.
Well,
and I think that's the point she's making. That's a major point she's trying to make here.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, the idea is slavery is gone by that amendment.
Okay. What do you think, Chris? Is that what she's kind of getting across? Or do you think that the 13th Amendment has some other factor to play in the argument?
I'm not sure about the 13th Amendment. I mean, for the most part, I think it is about slavery being, you know, the United States working slavery into, what am I trying to say here? Just into the prison system, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're not really sure as to what DuVernay is trying to argue in regards to between the 13th Amendment and the issue of African Americans incarceration in the prison systems. Is that it, or are you just having, or is there something else?
Yeah, basically. That and I'm having a brain fart at the moment.
So. Yeah,
no, I get you. This is a pretty heavy film. I will say that this is a film that is definitely trying to tackle something that is extremely sensitive. It is extremely troubling, and I don't think that anyone here is going to disagree that there is a problem with African American incarceration in the United States. They are well over. They're overrepresented in the penal system, right? Can we all agree to that? That's something that we're not going to argue against in regards to this situation.
Yes.
But if there is, then let's go ahead and get it out right away.
Right.
But do you also agree that there is a problem with the overrepresentation of African Americans?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I mean, let's
get this out of the way so that we can have the we can argue the film outside of that particular area, that particular era, however we want to see the film. All right. So with that said, let's talk about what it is that DuVernay is saying is the reason behind this overrepresentation. Now, the main thesis is I kind of see it is that she's saying that the 13th Amendment, while it was intended to end slavery, that individuals, especially at the time of the around the time of Nixon and Lee Atwater, specifically the Southern strategy, that they had found a way to manipulate the 13th Amendment as a means of pacifying the African American vote. To ensure that Republicans and conservative-minded individuals will win elections. And that while it did help Nixon and it helped Reagan, that even liberal and Democrats had to kind of fall in the same line of reasoning in order to win votes. That's kind of how I'm seeing this particular argument. The problem here is that technically speaking, and the film kind of brushes this aside while semi kind of acknowledging it, is that this was kind of done before, in especially during the Progressive period. In the early in the 1890s and all the way up to about the 1920s, where prisons, especially in the South, had used this kind of prison leasing in order to use prisoners to they would hire prisoners out to corporations to to do work, and these corporations would torture and brutalize these prisoners.
Were they doing it to big corporations or smaller businesses? Because I think that's a major point here, is that in the modern times, it's bigger businesses, the big business of the private-owned prison, doing stuff for other big businesses.
Well, that's
and
true.
And that's who they're running it to. Not the small, like, Farmer John down the way needs 10 workers. Okay, he gets it. They're Ooh. Like, no, we're going to throw 200 prisoners at this one project for Walmart.
Well, here's the thing that the film doesn't do, is that it doesn't look at the context of slavery. You have to understand that most of the slaves that were held in the South prior to the Civil War was held by nearly 2% of right. the South. Not a whole lot of people had that many slaves, other than the huge plantations. They had a whole lot of them. Most people never had a slave. No, most people didn't own a slave. They went along with slavery because it brought prosperity, but many didn't hold slaves at all. And as when it comes to the small, one of the things that we kind of talked about when we talked about 12 Years a Slave, the larger plantations were a lot better to their slaves than the smaller ones, because the larger ones looked at it as business, while the smaller ones had to push those slaves harder to get as much done as the larger plantations. So they were a lot more brutal than the larger plantations.
Still slavery.
Yeah, it's a fucked up system. Slavery is extremely fucked
up. But it's also a, like you said, 2% of the you had the 2% convincing the 98%, hey, let's go to war with the rest of the country to preserve our way of not paying for labor.
Yeah, but the thing is another thing that I think the 13th kind of misses the point on, is that it wasn't just African Americans that were used in the prison lease and that were used for the incarceration. the thing is that there is an extreme overrepresentation of African Americans in the prison system and are that are being manipulated for corporate greed. But at the same time, it's not because they're black. And in my opinion, the one thing that kind of just gets ignored is that it's because they're poor. That this isn't an issue of race. It's an issue of class. Because I'm not saying that there are more whites in prisons than blacks, because that's not right. But the whites get caught up in this as well. And they do kind of throw the statistics of, one in three men, while it's like 40% or 49%, not 49, it was like 42, 43% of black men go to prison, something like
40.
That.
40.2, I think.
Yeah, it was so ridiculous.
They have really nice graphics for these. Really nice visuals. Although, interesting enough, when they put up those visuals, they never put a statistic. They don't pull up a study or a research thing for them. They just kind of throw out the graphic, which part of me feels – it's one of the things that Michael Moore would do at times, is that he would just throw a little visual out there and just demand that people accept his argument just because. And in fact, that was one of the things that he was extremely criticized for with most of his documentaries. Was that he would just throw out a number and I just accept it. That's it.
And you almost need an annotated guide while you're watching it, so you could pause it, open up your little pamphlet or PDF or whatever, and go, "Oh, there's a study. Oh, okay, that's what they mean. Okay, go back."
Well, you don't exactly put that in the film,
right? Or you have it in the end credits. Here's this study. Here's this study.
Well, we'll get into that, because one of the things that really frustrates me with the sources that it is the sources that kind of frustrate me, because at one particular point they're using as a source BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed is to the left what Breitbart is to the right.
I'm not buying it.
Period.
I don't see BuzzFeed as to the left as Breitbart is to the right. I see BuzzFeed as, here's the Snickers bar instead of the actual meal you should be having.
This is the same organization that tried to pass off Donald Trump peeing on a bed in Russia that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama slept in. This is exactly the same type of thing that Breitbart would do.
BuzzFeed is in it for the right four clicks.
So that's
my view. It doesn't matter what their political spectrum base is. It's sensationalism.
Yeah, it's
BuzzFeed.
I think that 13th as a film is definitely trying to be sensational. Again, it's trying to do the exact same thing that Michael Moore did with his documentaries, which is to shock the audience and to get them to be so astounded by what's happening that they don't really ask questions as to how that information is coming about, why they're using this particular piece of information. And that also goes for a lot of the talking heads that we have here. Because the talking heads that we got for this particular film is pretty wild. I mean, we've got it all over the place. We have professors. We have politicians. We have, former activists. A shit ton of activists. We're talking about... You know, activists from the 60s, 70s, all the way up into the...
It's the greatest hits of activism.
Black Lives Matter protests, things of that nature. But it's interesting because a lot of these particular activists, they don't really talk about what they've done or their particular fight, with the exception of Angela Davis. I think Angela Davis is the only one, and even her... part was down to like a minute, two minutes, as to what she's done. And then they cut back to Van Jones.
A good activist shouldn't be discussing what they are up to. They should be discussing what the problem is or whatever it is that they are actively trying to fix, not themselves. If you're like, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. Well, then you're putting yourself ahead of the...
Well, no, the thing is, because the whole reason why you get an activist is that they have to, especially if you're pulling up from a historical point.
Right.
Like Angela Davis, what she done, that was back in the 70s. Yeah. So we need to know what it is that she was involved in. And that's another one of my particular problems, is while they talk about activists... or incarcerated activists in a couple of instances or several instances, they never say why they were incarcerated. They never say what crime it was that they had performed. In fact, it was very interesting because they had brought up a particular individual that had fled to Cuba.
Yeah.
The thing is that the reason why the individual fled to Cuba was because she murdered cops. But they never say it. Because, again, I'll say this right now, a lot of what Van Jones says, ooh.
Okay, well.
I guess maybe this elections of this whole election cycle has really soured me on Van Jones. I've never been against Van Jones until last year, just because he just really showed his ass over the 2016 election, and then of course his reaction to the Donald Trump win, the whole white lash thing, I guess was also kind of a sour point for me as well. But it seems like he's pretty much the go-to here, right? I mean, it seems like he's on in about half of this film is Van Jones talking about things, right?
Not because he was available. A lot of these people... I watched the extra that Netflix has, which was Oprah Winfrey interviewing Ava.
You mean Oprah and Ava DuVernay?
Yeah. And it was like, how did you get to talk to these people? Well, some of these people only had like five... Some people only had a few minutes. Some people wanted to go on for like 2 hours or so. And it was a matter of editing, just cutting down to make sure the movie wasn't going to be a 15-hour-long documentary.
This would have been a much better type of documentary if it was given the Ken Burns style
miniseries.
of, you know, like 13 hours of really getting to know what these individuals think and their contributions. Because one of the things is, I've actually been someone that's been kind of supportive of Cory Booker since I saw a documentary called Street Fight. Have y'all seen Street Fight out of curiosity?
No.
I haven't, no.
No.
Street Fight is a documentary. It's actually an Oscar-nominated documentary about a it was about the fight for becoming the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, or if I'm not correct, okay. Whereas Cory Booker was going up against the establishment nominee. It was for the Democratic nomination, and it's a really good documentary, very compelling. And Cory Booker was, you know, the young idealistic. He was going up against the old establishment guy, and you know, this guy just really used every tactic in the book. Everything bad about the Democrats was what this guy was pretty much about, and they really vilified this guy. But it really brought Cory Booker to prominence. In fact, after that, he lost for that particular campaign. He won later on, and then of course now he's a senator, if I'm not correct, for New Jersey.
He is a senator. Okay, I thought he was still mayor, but okay, yeah, he is senator.
No. He's now in Washington, but and of course, you know, hearing him talk about things, it's like part of me wishes that he would have really talked about his experience and what he knows. His expertise, I think, would have just been great. Charles Rangel, yeah. Who. I mean, let's be honest here. Charles Rangel has a very mixed history when it comes to race relations and his own, his own record.
Yeah.
It would have been great to really get into that. Again, part of me just wishes that we would have gotten more detail. This was a movie that felt like it was cut down to like a bite size, which should have taken a lot longer and a lot more detail, a lot more information.
She wanted it under 2 hours.
Well, that's the problem. Especially for all the people that they threw into this movie. We're talking about how many? 40?
If you don't know who the principals are, you do get confused as to... Because there are times it's like, wait, isn't that... No? Okay, wait, no. Who's that again? Yeah. Like, the only people I recognize... Like, there are a lot of people I did not recognize because you'd have to explain who is this person to me.
There were 39 interviewers or interviewees. Okay. 39. That is, especially for an hour and 40-minute documentary, that is overkill. And remember, like I said, Van Jones takes up most of this time. He is really the one that just is there for the longest. And interesting enough... most of the individuals that are being interviewed here are African American, which it makes sense to an extent. But at the same time, considering that they are basically there's quite a bit of racial conflict that this film is talking about. The voices, the white voices that are brought out. Really have just maybe like five minutes total, I want to say, which is perfectly fine in you know, considering. But at the same time, I don't know. It's just part of me just thinks that there should have been a lot more. Like they had Newt Gingrich on for like, 30 seconds? It's like, and I don't even really understand what it was that he was saying. I mean, it's like they cut it down so short.
He was talking about the 90s, about the... Part of it was the Clinton administration, how about the Clinton continuation of the war on crime and how candidates had to jump on the war on crime bandwagon and just outdo each other.
Hmm. But what so do you...
I'd love to see his uncut interview, but...
I would have loved to have seen a lot of these uncut interviews.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like part of me wishes that we would have gotten more time to really understand what these individuals have to say in their parts, because a lot of what they're saying are basically abstracts. It's, you know, the problem is this. It's not that they're coming from it from an experience, or they're not detailing how their experience comes to this particular conclusion. It's just thrown out there. So it's like, well, you know, this is this reason because this. And it really, and again, because they're cutting so much out, and they're cutting out so much so much detail. You know, it's because it's like it's rushing through all this stuff. It's rushing it through breakneck speed. It's expecting you to kind of agree with it right off the bat. It doesn't really make its case. It's just, oh, you know, this is true. That, you know, that don't even argue it. This is true. And we expect you to believe it. If you have any question whatsoever, well, tough on you. Accept it.
Isn't it part of the job of anybody watching one of these, if they question any of it, they could check it later? Because this is not as bad as Michael Moore's, this is what's going on, okay, don't question it. This was more, okay, here's what... I found her style to be a little more able to explain what was happening than what Moore does.
Okay, did she explain how Black Lives Matter comes about? Or the Black Panthers, for that matter? I mean, they drop these out there. They drop, Martin Luther King Jr. They drop Malcolm X. They name drop quite a bit. They brought up the guy who started the Black Panthers. Yet at the same time, though, they don't explain exactly what he does. They just, again, they expect you to know. It's like, oh, that's...
Well,
you know.
here's a question. Who is the audience for this movie? Is it us free whitey McWhite whites, or is it, or is it the African American community? Or honestly, is it trying to be everyone? Because if it's not us, then the idea of not explaining what the origin story behind Black Lives Matter, the Black Panthers is, isn't necessary, because the African American community knows that. So you don't have to explain it. For us, oh yeah, unless you've previously studied this in any way, shape, or form, yeah, you're kind of lost.
Yeah. No, the film assumes that you're going to know all of this stuff going forward. And perhaps that's perfectly fine for a film that is dealing with something broad, but here they're making a specific argument. They are arguing that our government, because we support our government, or we vote, and that we are involved in the governmental process, that we ourselves, and that means all of us, are responsible for the incarceration of Black men in prisons, specifically Black men. Again, it doesn't give any leeway for other individuals in prison. And again, it's very interesting how, because of that, it makes that assumption. It makes these assumptions. Well, you should know this. You should know this. We don't need to explain much more than that. You mentioned that this does a lot better than Michael Moore. I'm going to disagree. Michael Moore does a lot better job, because he will give you information. He'll explain, you know, how this individual plays into the massive thing. I go back to Fahrenheit 9/11 specifically, because you haven't seen it?
I haven't seen it, so.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
But it's a pretty wild ride, because again, he's making insinuations regarding the President of the United States having a personal interest in the aftermath of 9/11, stating that the President used this to his political and personal advantage. And so he's connecting individuals to the President, and he's making sure to detail all of these things. He's explaining how the CIA works in regards to kind of setting up conflicts for the United States. And he does this very systematically. DuVernay doesn't do this. And I'm going to say that part of that is because she is not a documentarian. Perhaps she had done some student documentaries, but she doesn't have the same skill set as someone such as Ken Burns or even so much as Spike Lee. Spike Lee does a very good job in his documentaries. I don't know if have y'all seen his documentaries on Katrina when the levees broke and I forgot the name of the second one he did, which was like 5 or 10 years after. But those were extremely detailed. Of course, those are vastly longer documentaries as well. And again, I think part of me is also like, why did you condense yourself down to 1 hour and 40 minutes for Netflix?
Yeah.
It's not exactly you're going to be showing this in in screens. I mean, hell, we had a 6-hour O.J. Simpson documentary that's nominated for Academy Awards.
They showed it for what, a weekend just to get it in the Oscars? Or something ridiculous like that.
It's
OJ like, made in America. Yeah. Which.
And I mean, okay, fine. I mean, you know, make the condensed version for the Oscars, but then you release the full version on Netflix, like, you know, which we had with The Act of Killing. You know, they had the condensed one, then we had the 3.5-hour version that we had seen for our discussion on that film. Part of the major problems that I'm having with this particular film, and that's not even getting into some of the logistical issues. Well, I guess we've talked about some of the logistical issues, but I guess another thing that I'm going to go ahead and just bring it out here that I found very interesting is the film is very interested in making the case that white Americans played a large part in the suffering of African Americans. And I guess, again, this is something that we cannot deny has happened, historically speaking. And that, in a way, it is still happening. But I would argue not on a systematic level. It's not systemically. It's individually. With the exception of again, maybe I'm being completely wrong on this one. And I'll admit, because of the whole prison thing, the prison, the way that the prisons have kind of allowed the
privatization and monetization of
prisons. Yes, the monetization, but again, it's not specifically it's not specifically African American, so it's not only African Americans that this is going after. Do get Lee Atwater, we get I forgot what's his name, the architect of the Southern Strategy, talking about how, you know, the whole the drug war on drugs was a lie and stuff like that. Yes, that is definitely I could see that, especially with the Southern Strategy working to a T. But at the same time, though, and I find it very interesting, though, that we don't see anyone talking about the fact that there is a drug problem in the African-American community, that there is a problem with violence in the African-American community. They don't at all bring up the issues, issues that African Americans are responsible for. You know, when we got into the Black Lives Matter,
you brought up class issues right at the beginning. And I think there's where you could find a lot of this. If you look at, and then she brings up in the movie too, the whole how blacks were painted with one of our favorite movies here on our House of Legends, Birth of a Nation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a
documentary that is coming out pretty soon that is actually talking about Birth of a Nation, which I'm actually quite interested in. I believe it's actually done by Spike Lee, where he's talking about how that changed or how that influenced how people saw African-Americans moving forward.
And you could take that and say you can make an argument right now for, white people doing violence or doing drugs, that's nothing. But these black people doing the same thing in the same social class, in the same economic class, we have to put them in jail. I could look around and just when I go, last time I really visited or hung out with anybody from my hometown, and we were just doing a discussion about, about something or other, and one of them somebody made this comment about, oh, I'm sure everybody in the hood is making crack pipes. And mm-hmm. I really wanted to look at them and say,
yeah, that's
you're
obnoxious.
In the number one, you're in the number one meth area
mm-hmm.
in the state. Why are you pointing fingers?
Yeah.
It's a very kind of racist statement to make. Andy pot calling the kettle black.
Mm-hmm. I think that there. Might be a little bit too on the yeah. nose for this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, if that's the attitude, though, is, oh, we shouldn't, our people shouldn't go to jail because we're really not doing a crime, but they are, then you're going to see a disparity going on.
Okay. So,
even though it's the same
maybe this is a little too political, but should we agree that perhaps we need to have a change in drug policy?
Probably. Yes. Since originally, this is one of the things that she could have touched on and she didn't.
Yes.
Which I think would have taken this history would have taken 5 minutes to go over, and it wouldn't have done much. It would have shown a lot about how race is used. But the reason...
Well, she does bring that up. Differences between cocaine and crack cocaine.
I'm not talking cocaine. I'm talking, going to bring up marijuana in this country.
Mm-hmm.
The reason it's illegal was, Hearst wanted to ban hemp because it threatened his lumber industry and how that was how you can make better paper or you can make cheaper paper with hemp. And he didn't want it, so he associated it with marijuana, got all these people to say, oh, if people smoke this stuff called marijuana, it will make white women want to sleep with black guys. Let's ban it. So they totally
Reefer Madness.
Yeah. It links back to that. And she could have spent 5 to 10 minutes on that and just gone, here's a reason. So you get a African-American community that, you know... these guys are smoking pot. Let's go in there and arrest them all.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, during the late 60s, you also had plenty of whites doing it, but that's part of the drug strategy that they're talking about. Nixon, let's go in there and break up this group and that group
mm-hmm.
who are both doing drugs, both doing pot. You're not really even focusing on the harder cocaine later on, which is crack versus powder cocaine is a class issue.
Well, by that particular point, and again, this is one of the things I have to give to Vernay specifically, is that she does kind of bring up how the differences between how police treated cocaine to crack cocaine. But at the same time, though, she makes it out to be that cocaine was completely ignored. And that is absolutely 100% wrong. Otherwise, we wouldn't have gone after Pablo Escobar. We wouldn't have gone. There was a, I hate to use the word crackdown, but
no,
cocaine that was as much a dangerous a drug. And it was attacked on the same level as crack cocaine. But at the same time, though, the film lacks subtlety. The film lacks kind of looking at the, you know, look at the complicated nature. The film has a very set mindset as to what the problems are, and it doesn't really want to look at kind of the smaller, finer details of what's going on.
I think she wanted to speed up to the connections at the end during the last, like, half hour or so
tying it all into the recent the
prison
recent
industrial
protests.
Complex. No, the prison industrial complex is, I think that's really what she wanted to go for and start tying all that together and just...
Well, no, I mean, she starts making the groundwork for that around, I want to say, the 25 to 30 minute mark, because that's when she goes after Alec. And
is it that early on? I thought it was later. Maybe
nope,
that first
the 25
part
to 30
was kind of
mark.
Dry. maybe that first part just kind of dragged for me, and I thought it was later in the movie.
Yeah. No, they start making Alec mentions because they're trying to tie it back into the Southern strategy that Alec was used specifically by the Republicans as a part of the Southern strategy in order to win power in Southern states. And then, of course, they use all of those wonderful things from like John Oliver and The Daily Show and stuff like that. To make those ties. And again, it's one of the things like this stuff is true, this stuff is horrifying, and this stuff needs to be dealt with. But the question then becomes, is this an issue, a corporate issue? Is this a social issue? Is this I guess the thing is, what exactly is she attacking? What is she saying is the problem? What should we be doing to fix this issue? And the film doesn't really lay out that groundwork. It lays out the blame, but it doesn't really lay out a way of solving the solution.
I think we're expected to start coming up with various solutions ourselves and just kind of start activizing. Did I just make a word?
I'm going to go back to Bowling for Columbine for this one, because one of the things I admire about Bowling for Columbine, even now, even though I know most of it was kind of bullshit, is that Michael Moore says, okay, we have a serious problem here, but we don't have a solution. We don't know exactly what it is.
He just says we don't have it.
He lays out the fact that we don't know, whereas here it's never even brought up. With the exception of, we should be showing the bodies, as though that's something. It's like,
I get the feeling she's trying to say, no, let's not have such close groups like Alec, or have private prisons that actively are in it for the money, and not for the... Because I definitely came away with, when she's talking about Reagan's
but then why doesn't she bring up Alec later on in the film? Because when you get to the end of the film, when it comes to these kind of political documentaries, you need to start kind of giving an idea of what steps need to be taken, or what, you know, what we should be focusing on in regards to dealing with the solution, even if you don't have a solution. And again, with like Michael Moore ends Bowling for Columbine with a conversation with Charlton Heston, who was at that time the president of the National Rifle Association, or its head spokesman. And so you were able to kind of tie that violent, you know, you're able to tie all of these things together into an ending that leaves you asking, how do we fix this? And again, I'm going to tie this up to DuVernay just not being a seasoned documentarian. This is something that she's very excited to get her point across, but she doesn't really take the time to really get that point across. And it's one of those things that it's just, again, a new filmmaker, someone who has a lot of passion, but just doesn't... You know, she probably didn't ask the right questions in regards to her interviews. I would love to, again, if she did ask the right questions, I would love for there to be, and I would actually go back and see an extended version of 13th, you know, 5 or 6 hour version, just so that I can get those interviews, so that I can look at the materials that she has. But the thing is, though, is it just seems to me like she was just asking, well, what do you think we should do, or what do you think is the problem? And just left that as the question, because that seems to be the question that everybody answers. But no one really has a true grasp on it, and no one ties in their answer to something that they've gone through, or that they're, you know, their piece of the solution. You don't have Angela Davis talking about how, well, back in my time and what was happening here, this is a reason why we have the issue that we're having. You don't have Cory Booker talking about how his experiences either in his past or what he's doing in Congress. Charles Rangel. Again, these should be the voices that are saying, you know, these are the steps that we need to be taking to move forward. In fact, I find it very interesting because Charles Rangel, if I'm not correct, was the one in Fahrenheit 9/11 who dropped the bomb that, you know, congressmen don't read the bills that they are put on their desk.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm not correct, I believe that he was the one that answered that in Fahrenheit 9/11. So again, in that documentary, he was asked the right question and he got an answer that was very interesting and that led us to give us a reason to, or give us a point that we say, okay, so that needs to be fixed, you know, or that, you know, this is something that needs to be addressed. Here we have a lot of people giving in ideas, but nothing that really resonates as part of a solution. It just seems like they're laying blame, but they're not really tying it into something that can be used as a way of fixing it. And I don't know, just to me, that's kind of that's a serious problem with a documentary that's tackling something that this is this heated. And Chris, you've been extremely quiet.
Yeah.
Perhaps rightfully yeah. So. This is, you know, but you got to come on in on this. So what do you think?
My deal is just like I'm not political. I don't watch a lot of documentaries. So like every documentary that's been mentioned, I haven't seen any of them. I didn't know who any of these people were in this movie, but like. I totally get the whole, like, it seemed like all the interviews were, like, jumbled together. You didn't get everything out of it. But I would not make it through a version of 13th that was a minute longer than it already was. I was bored to tears.
Okay.
Bored to tears.
So
it's just like, I...
So, sorry, well, this is a film that was pretty much universally praised by the critics. Why do you think it was that no one really addressed these types of issues? It's because I specifically remember going through and it was just everyone kind of got onto this bandwagon about how this is, you know, the this is a firebrand. This is, you know, this is tackling, you know, a serious issue, but no one really questions anything about the fact that not a whole lot is really said that isn't something that you could normally get out of other sources. Or you know, you said that this is pretty much new to you. Did this,
yeah.
You know, did you find this harrowing? Did this make you think about the situation? Did it cause any, did this cause you to kind of want to find out more about what's going on?
Kind of. I mean... Whenever I watch a film like this, I feel like it's obvious Oscar bait, basically. Like, any movie that's designed to, like, built around slavery or, like, just, like, that time period or dealing with black people in, like, a hardened mm-hmm. time or whatever, it's always seems to be building towards, oh, we can try to get an Oscar for this. And it's often, like, nominated or whatever. It's like, okay, great, whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just, it's... I think it's a topic that needs to be discussed, but, like... Movie like this, it's designed for you to sympathize with black people, and rightfully so. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like, I feel like it's making white people hate themselves. And I have no idea what to do with myself after watching this movie, basically. It's like, okay, I've gone through your movie, and know I have an idea, at least, of what black people have gone through because of your movie. What the fuck do I do now?
Mm-hmm.
That's basically where I'm at. I see something like this. So,
what you do is you vote in different people because I think they're pointing out it's a lot of this is coming from government sources. You vote in people who allow this to you vote in different the people in now allow this to happen. You vote in people who won't allow this to happen, who will start saying, "No, prisons need to be run by the state, not by corporations," and start reeling it all back in. Maybe get rid of mandatory minimums, which I heard mm-hmm. that as a call.
No, I mean, which, I agree. Yeah. I agree that we need to have a complete overhaul in the political system. Again, the film has some interesting places to go. The problem is that it doesn't take enough time to really look at those particular issues, and it doesn't get the individuals that would have the most understanding. And it doesn't give them enough time to really draw out those particular ideas. And to me, it's all just so rapid fire, so quick to jump to the next step, to jump to the next argument, to the next discussion, that it doesn't really lay out the groundwork for the discussion that's already had. And I know I'm kind of beating a dead horse at this particular point, for, you know, in this argument. But the thing is that the film, it's like it's wanting to appear objective, but it's very clear that it's kind of just it's not objective. It wants the audience to come to a conclusion, but it doesn't really know exactly what conclusion that the audience should be coming to, with the exception of that white people play a large part in the problems, and that African Americans don't hold any responsibility for the events that are happening. And to me, the fact that it lays so much responsibility on one group and doesn't even acknowledge it at all, it never acknowledges at all the issues regarding what African Americans need to do in their own communities. It never talks about that. It lays it flat on society or flat on white America specifically. And I get a little nervous because, again, there is a major issue that does come from society in white America. You cannot deny that. But at the same time, though, it leaves it primarily just as the blame. It's a blame game. It's not really talking about how to figure out the solution. And considering that, another thing that I found very interesting is, while yes, it does kind of go after Democrats, it lays this as a Republican issue, and that the reason why the Democrats are responsible is because they're following Republican ideas.
Oh yeah, about being tough on crime.
Yes,
which Democrats who look at crimes and say we need treatment in the prisons,
mm-hmm.
and Republicans will just be no, we need punishment. Which actually, the original, when they go back to the Reagan era and just say no, they have that. Somebody say no. The implication was there would be treatment in the prisons. But I guess cutting corners, making more money for the private system, you get rid of treatment because that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have to keep being tougher on crime and tougher and tougher and tougher. And yeah, to the point where you just don't.
But one thing that I found very interesting is that while it does bring up drug crimes, it never tackles the issue of violence.
Right.
In African American communities, it never even mentioned the fact that black on black violent crime is just so much stronger than with any other group.
If I had my figures in front of you, I would say that's been disproven.
No.
Because white on white is even bigger, and things going, no.
Per capita, you have to look at it per capita because there are more white people than there are African Americans in America. So yes, there are more. There is a significant amount of white on white,
but why is violent the crime?
But it's
you
got to
look at why is the crime happening? Is the crime happening because of the drugs? Is the crime happening because if the crime is happening?
These are questions that the movie should have been tackling.
Okay.
The thing is that we're talking about things that this film left completely vague and ambivalent. It was basically, we are locking up black men, and it's specifically black men that this film is tackling.
Right.
It's not even looking at black women.
Right. They had an opportunity during the Stand Your Ground discussion. Because there's a black woman in Florida who discharged a firearm, and her defense was stand your ground, and she went to prison. I don't know if she's been released or not, but
she's in prison right now.
I think she's still in for like 30 years for standing her ground, defending herself against like an ex or something. But they said, no, it doesn't count for you.
Yeah. No, film... these are things that the film should have been tackling. It should have been looking at this more objectively. It should have been really getting into this. And it especially for a Netflix film, it should have been 6 fucking hours. And I know, you know, I know that you probably come on, we got to do this. We got to man up. Just, you know, we got to do it.
If I had time this week, I would have watched OJ. I would have, but
no,
had some stuff come up. So yeah,
but like life.
Yes, life happens. It's not about the movies, although I strongly disagree. But that's just me personally. All right, so let's go ahead and let's bring this back down. Out of curiosity, did this change how you look at the issue? Did this film, even if you disagree with it, or if you agree with it, did it kind of make you really want to know more? Did it provide you with a unique perspective? Did it give you something new to think about in regards to the issue?
Well, like I said back at the beginning, I'd heard parts of this before from other sources, but this really did kind of bring it together and start showing the connections. So, which kind of reminds me of like the crazy conspiracy guy at a board putting up things and then tying in strings and connecting them. And but at the same time, you know, let me tell you a story about something I saw right before I watched this movie. Okay. A friend of mine who's into conspiracy theories that
Alex Jones,
I had seen on Facebook that he had liked a post that was discussing the rounding up of illegal immigrants right now. And it said, we don't have to worry about the crops rotting in the fields. We should just put the prisoners out there harvesting them.
There's a reason why we don't have prisoner leasing programs.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, it's the same issue about using the prisoners to build that damn wall that they're talking about. It's No. It's you know, this is bullshit. You can't do that to prisoners. Prisoners have rights. You know, the whole point of them being in prison is a punishment in itself. You know, what the punishment should stay within the confines of the prison. It should not be used to be exploited for someone else's personal gain. That's not how prisons should be run. In fact, if it were up to me, we should rethink the whole prison situation, especially when it comes to sentencing, especially for drug crimes. This is bullshit. It's just gone on too long enough. We need to just declare the war on drugs over. But again, that's all politics. I'll do that on some other podcast or something. But no, the thing is that this film, it's got an idea. It's really got an interesting idea and a really interesting concept, but it never truly delivers what it is that it's trying to get at. It doesn't really tackle that. It hits it from time to time. And it comes back around by the very end, but it never gives enough evidence to put it directly into the, you know, to answer the question that it kind of answer the thesis that it builds in the beginning.
Do you say it has to have an answer and
well, not have at the end, or does it needs to address?
Can it just be informational?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to have an answer. I don't expect all documentaries to have a solution, but it needs to at least mention, like, look, this is what we know right now, and right now we need to find a solution. It needs to kind of come back to the question at the beginning of the film and go, why does this matter? Why is the 13th Amendment being used this way? And it needs to get back to that particular issue. That's especially when you're building it on a thesis, when you're building your argument on a thesis, it has to come back and it has to say, okay, everything that we provided to you up to this point is it is tackling this issue, and maybe a third of it does. The rest of it is basically just talking about how crappy things have been for African Americans throughout history. And it never really comes back to the 13th. It never reminds us that what this is regarding the 13th Amendment. And yeah, so on that basic level, it falls apart, on the basic level, not to mention that, again, a lot of the sources, a lot of the things they're using is just questionable. And it doesn't provide us with enough real sources. It just throws things together. Like the montage at the end of the film where it does everything over Donald Trump and what Donald Trump says. The problem is that it's a cool little montage to talk about how, you know, what Donald Trump says has been done to African Americans in history. But the thing is that many of the things that Donald Trump was saying, it wasn't specifically to African Americans. It was to people on the left. It was to people that disagreed with him politically of any race or gender. But the film just wanted to associate Donald Trump with racism. Even though there's already enough that you could probably make a case, you know, realistically, you don't have to pull this kind of visual stunt work to do that. But the film feels like it had to make a cheap ploy in that on that degree. And part of me feels like it was done specifically to have an influence on the election, which, I mean, I don't know what. Say what you will if it should be the case or not. Free speech is free speech, and I will definitely defend that. But man, it doesn't help you when you're trying to say that you're objectively looking at something and you're wanting to provide an objective look at it. This doesn't help your case. But that's just how I see it. But what about you, Chris? Anything that you're getting out of this? Anything that makes you question the situation?
I mean,
do you feel like you need to go stick really. It to the man now?
I don't know. I feel like I'm the wrong person to ask. I'm just
a lowly film critic, huh?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, well, then let me ask a question that is prevalent. Do you think that the film deserves the Oscar nomination that it got for Best Documentary Feature Length?
Probably, I guess. It's hard to say. I mean, as long as it's not nominated for like best editing, I think we're good.
Right? Ouch!
I would say I absolutely love the transitions that they used for the, you know, for the time periods when you had like the little graphs and graphics. Those are pretty cool, and the use of music to kind of bring these things together. It's pretty. I'll say that it definitely helps the visual aesthetic for the film, but I don't know. But if it doesn't really help the argument that it's making, you know, hearing Public Enemy talk about, you know, how the cops are after them doesn't really give us an objective look on race relations regarding the police, especially in the 80s and 90s, especially considering that they completely bypassed the whole gangster culture that had been growing around the late 80s, early 90s, and completely bypass all the violence that had been happening, that had created the situation. Or I'm not going to say it created the situation. There's always a situation. As we had talked about on Art House Legends practically from episode one about the police. But at the same time, though, it didn't help the situation at all. Again, anyway. The film, you know, it brought up Birth of a Nation, but yeah, it should have brought up, other films that tackled these issues, including Boys in the Hood and Do the Right Thing, and other films that tackled race relations, especially if you're going to be making this particular argument. But
you know, I had 2 seconds of 12 Years a Slave, so
the torture porn version of slavery.
Yeah,
again, so it's like, yes, random. I mean, the stuff like this did happen, but at the same time, it definitely heightens up the, for dramatic purposes. But, you know, again, it's just one of those things, like I said, I am so going to get hate mail for my opinions here. And yes, you can definitely send those to arthouselegends@gmail.com. My opinions are my own, so feel free to single me out specifically. But what about you, Ken? Do you think that the film deserves the Oscar nomination?
I think it deserves it more than O.J. Made in America, which is just put in theaters for like one weekend just so it would get a nomination.
No, because films do that, and I respect that.
Except that O.J. Made in America is, what, 9 hours long?
It doesn't matter.
It's a miniseries. It's a miniseries.
And I have it on good sources that that documentary is badass. So
It
probably is, but shouldn't it have just stayed on and gone for Emmy instead of Oscar? Mm-hmm. That's my view on that.
All I will say is...
Which it could possibly win.
I saw a documentary that freaking put me to tears. And I'm saying that in a good way, and that was Gleason, and there was no love for that documentary, and that surprised the hell out of me. One just killed me. And of course, it is so a white movie. So
yeah. Well, is it?
Yes.
This is all of Hollywood that votes, so.
Well, the thing is, when it comes to documentaries, I have a hard time relating that to Hollywood specifically, because documentaries is kind of out of the standard Hollywood form. Documentaries tend to be made extremely independently, financed by the documentarians through. I'd say that there would be a great documentary just on the basis of making a documentary. In fact, I think. If I'm not correct, Morgan Spurlock actually made a documentary about making a documentary.
Oh, okay.
Called the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. If I'm not correct, that's kind of the whole premise of that documentary. But, or I should say, it's Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. Because, you know, irony. That said, though, I don't think that it deserves the nomination simply just because this is subpar. This is this is a documentary that doesn't deliver on the basic premise that it was going on. And while I admire Ava DuVernay as a filmmaker, and I still will see whatever she does next, I think she has A Wrinkle in Time coming up next. Which
That's her project?
Yep, that's her.
Ooh.
If I'm not correct, okay. I think that that's a pretty much a lock. In fact, I think she got Oprah to come back to work with her on that one, which means that that could be a very interesting, unique look on that source material. I will definitely be seeing more of her films, and I'll be excited for her. But at the same time, though, this was a bridge too far. It was just that she just needed a little bit more time working on this film. I think that there was a bit of a rush to get this out before the election. I do believe that that kind of hurt the film's overall tone. And I think that the fact that they were trying to aim it for such a small screen time to have it underneath the 2-hour mark hurt the documentary as well. This is especially considering the grand epic nature of what this film is discussing. But again, that's my opinion. All right, so let's end the suffering a little early. We don't have to worry about geek sheets on this.
Just a quick note: Wrinkle in Time is in post, so she's done filming that.
Wow! So time I heard it was just starting. So maybe it had return time. So that's cool. That's cool. I'm definitely going to be going to see it.
Yeah,
but. Kent, Chris, do you agree with the critics on 13th? Do you give it a pass? Do you give it a fail? Or are you just a racist? Chris.
Oh, come on.
I wouldn't say pass, but I mean, It's closer to a fail, but I guess I'd have to go with a maybe, just because it's. I mean, it gets its. I mean, it doesn't really explore the whole 13th Amendment thing very well, but I feel like it has some good points in there. So, I mean, I'd stick with the maybe.
That's what I'll go with. Kent.
I'm kind of torn between passing and maybeing it. You have made an argument against every thing about this movie, but
yes,
I
take full responsibility. Feel free.
But
to...
I still feel like cutting down the front of mine. That's like, oh yeah, putting prisoners to work, good idea. I may set his butt down and make him watch this movie because I know he's a fan of the her stuff that is mm-hmm. banned because it's like paper, and say, look, you would be in prison too, or probably not because you're Whitey McWhite, but that guy who's doing the same thing you did, you want him being a slave again. Yeah, good job. Mm-hmm. And so I think I'm going to be recommending this to a few people. So, by that note, by the fact I'd be recommending it, I have to pass it. I can't just say, oh, maybe. No. If I'm going to say, hey, you, watch this, stuff will make sense. Mm-hmm. Or you could question it after you watch it and stuff, maybe come up with some counters to what she's saying. But, hey, I think it gets you at least on the track to thinking about some of these issues.
Well, honestly, I've seen this film twice. The first time I saw it, I was deeply disappointed with the result, primarily because it didn't deliver on the premise. It says that this is that it opens up with the 13th Amendment was used in order to incarcerate black men. The irony of ironies, and while it does kind of bring up an interesting concept about the 13th Amendment, it never fully delivers. And there's so many holes in that argument that it doesn't hold up. And she doesn't, and Ava DuVernay as the documentarian, doesn't deliver enough evidence to prove her point. It leaves it open. It basically just says, okay, so the 13th Amendment was used to incarcerate black men. Black people have had it bad through history, and white people were involved, and so it's your fault, white people. It's pretty much what it does. It doesn't really come up with an interesting concept about this outside of the whole 13th Amendment, and then just kind of drops it for the bulk of the film. It doesn't really tackle issues, and the biggest problem with the documentary is that it completely absolves any responsibility of the African-American community, doesn't even bring it up at all, and in fact goes out of its way to completely ignore anything that has happened in the African-American community that could have any part to play in this. And in doing so, it completely removes any ability that the film has to be objective. It removes any ability for this film to be taken seriously. This is just a hatchet piece. It is just a bunch of people complaining, and it doesn't really get to the root of the issue involved. There is serious problems. The industrialization of the of prison life has been an issue that needs to be resolved, because we cannot keep locking people up at the rate we are. We just don't have the money for it. We just don't have the resources for it. And it is not just affecting black people. It's affecting everybody. This is a serious issue that needs to be issue. And there needs to be a serious discussion and a debate about this. And we need a documentary that is willing to look at it more objectively, but the film doesn't want to do that, and that's really sad, considering that you have the makings of a really good documentary here. I part of me wishes that someone like Ken Burns or Errol Morris, or you know, any of a handful of other documentarians who have proven themselves could have come in and helped her kind of take these questions and really take as much out of them as humanly possible. But it just feels like she didn't ask the right questions, or if she didn't ask, she did ask the right questions, she didn't put those questions in her documentary. And that's not the question. That's not the way that you should be leaving your documentary. And I'm really troubled by how the critics have really taken to this film, and they haven't, they haven't given this film the objective look that they should have. It's like they saw the issue and they just said, okay, well, if she's tackling it, that's all that needs to happen. If a white filmmaker had done this exact same thing, if a Ken Burns or if an Errol Morris had done this same thing, if Werner Herzog had done this exact same movie, I'll tell you right now, that would have been fucking insane. Just saying. I would love for Werner Herzog to be tackling Black Lives Matter. That would be so awesome. But all the same, though, the objections that critics will normally have with a documentary, looking at it from those particular perspectives, would have been more critical. It would have put the film through a rigor of debate. And this is very troubling. And this is one of the reasons why film critics are in the situation that they're in right now, because of this kind of leniency that they will have to films that tackle issues that they are uncomfortable being critical about. And this needs to stop. Films like this need to be criticized, and they need to be held up to a standard, because it's not for the sake of the documentarian that you're criticizing. It's for the next one who needs to amp up the game, who can see this and go, look, we need to really answer these questions. We need to get to the bottom of this. We can't just leave it on, leave it on, okay, it's just white people's fault. We have to really get into this. And especially considering that documentaries have come such a long way in the last 10 years, the amount of detail, and a lot of it has to be because of the streaming revolution and the fact that we could have documentaries that are anywhere up to 20 hours long. This is a good thing for documentaries. Documentaries, especially about difficult issues, need to be longer. They need to have the time to really make their case, and it needs to be put together in a way that allows us to really tackle these issues. And this is a film that just doesn't do it. It doesn't do it at all. And I found myself getting angrier the second time I was seeing it, because I was really starting to notice how this movie sidesteps all of the unique perspectives that this film could have had, simply just so it can make a very simple and very overstated case that just didn't need 39 individuals to say. But that's the movie that we have. And so, yeah, it's a fail. And I hate doing that, because I respect Ava DuVernay. And I think that this could have been something very interesting if, you know, she would have been more honest about what she was doing, or more honest in the portrayal of what she was trying to get across. And of course, my email is arthouselegends@gmail.com. Feel free to send me all of the love that I know that I'm going to be getting for this one. Anyway, that's who knows? Maybe this will open that conversation up. Gentlemen, I think that we should go and do something happy for our next episode.
Happy, happy? No, we should involve a true king.
Hey, I don't know about you, but I'm all for big, hairy gorilla that's stomping all over New York. And we're talking about an actual monkey gorilla. Around. Or I guess he's an ape. Ooh. Or
monkey.
He's big, I'll tell you that much. But he yes, we're monkey. Going back to the 30s, and we're talking about the original king of New York, and that is, who is that, Kent?
King Kong.
So feel free to join us for that amazing conversation. I can't wait to discuss it. Actually, March is going to be pretty awesome. We have a lineup of movies that I cannot wait to talk about. So, Ken, do you want to give us a rundown of what we got?
Let's see. Well, we're starting out with King Kong. So we got big monster attacking everything. Then going to go animated, but not in the way
we're going back to Japan.
We're Japan, and we're going to drop a bomb with Akira.
Boy, we're so going to get so much hate in this episode.
But then we're back. We're coming back home again to Indiana with Hoosiers in the middle of March Madness. Because basketball is everything.
Because child abuse and alcoholism is something that we absolutely need in March.
Hey, it's about the game. Okay?
Okay, hey. All right.
And then, and then we're going to have something that's totally excellent. Party on, Wayne.
Party on.
Yeah. God, saying that Wayne's World is a classic of because it's aged is making me feel really
I actually found some interesting perspectives on Wayne's World, which I can't wait to talk about. I'm actually going to argue that Wayne's World is in fact a classic, and we will.
Well, I think so. I do think so too. It's just making me feel old looking at it, like And then finishing up the month because there's 5 Wednesdays in March with Lone Star.
Yes, and we'll be talking about the beginning of the reconnaissance in actuality. All right, so join us for March if we haven't completely off-put you with this particular episode. But we are definitely going to be having a lot of fun next month, and we hope that you'll join us for that episode. And again, if you have anything to say, hopefully nice things to say, please. But you can definitely hit us up on our Facebook feed or on Twitter at Art House Legends. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me. This is the Movie Dude, Eric.
And this is Kent.
And this is Chris.
And Fiend.